a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM, Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there, good morning. What a fantastic day in our fair city. Happy St. Patrick's Day, folks. And of course, we'll be talking all things Ireland on this morning's Now That's What I Call Sport here on 98FM. We'll get former boy in green Darren O'Dea's views on Declan Rice being named Ireland's Young Player of the Year, despite the fact that he's about to become an England international.
It's a bit of a farce, isn't it? I think they probably could have avoided the embarrassment.
I've also got tickets to give away for Ireland's first home Euro 2020 qualifier against Georgia, which is on Tuesday week. We'll find out how and why the Dublin hurlers have been celebrating Paddy's Day.
The Dublin dressing room here next to us sounds like a bit of a disco.
Yeah, well, just Paddy's weekend, like, you know.
Yeah, nothing better than a winning dressing room. Then things will get sad and serious with one of the most powerful interviews we've ever had on this show. Aaron McInniff will talk for the first time about the sudden death of his friend and teammate Ryan McBride, aged just 27. The former Derry City player passed away almost 2 years ago.
He was kind of crying on the phone, but I was like, what's wrong with you? And he said, Ryan's dead. And I was like, Ryan who? And he said, McBride, obviously. And I just couldn't believe it.
We look back on Ireland's Six Nations defeat to Wales yesterday and the campaign as a whole with Shane Byrne, captain Rory Best and head coach Joe Schmidt, who has been hitting back at some of the critics.
We've won 23 of our last 26 test matches. We finished third in the Six Nations. Once upon a time, that wasn't the catastrophe that it is today for Ireland.
So let us get the show on the road.
98FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Now it's time to welcome our former Ireland international and our expert really on all things boys in green, Mr. Darren O'Dea, back to the show. Now me and Darren are speaking on Friday afternoon because when this interview goes out on Sunday, Darren will be a couple of hours away from playing for his Dundee team against Celtic in the Scottish Premiership at 12:30. Darren, so a big game later on against your former club and a club that of course a lot of Irish people would know very fondly, I suppose.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Obviously lucky enough to play there earlier in my career, but yeah, we'll have a difficult game, no doubt, and one we'll need to be our very best to get anything out of.
Yes, well, the very best of luck with that, Darren. Now, we're going to speak about all things Ireland over the next 10 or 12 minutes or so and some of the items on our agenda. The optimism heading into a new campaign, the squad that Mick McCarthy has picked, these games against Gibraltar mainly, which is on next Saturday, the 23rd, and then Georgia the following Tuesday at home. But firstly, Darren, the Declan Rice story rumbles and rumbles because later on tonight, on Sunday, Declan Rice will be named the FAI 3 International Young Player of the Year. He won't be in Dublin to collect his award and the Ireland manager, Mick McCarthy, said this week that he wouldn't have given it to him and he actually would have chucked it in the Liffey. And there's been a massive outcry about this award and it's picked by the Soccer Writers Association and they've said they wanted to make sure that the person who they chose for 2018 when Declan Rice was an Ireland international got the award and they wanted to make sure that they didn't change their mind. But they haven't had too many supporters with that decision, neither had the FAI. What's your own thoughts on it?
It's a bit of a farce, isn't it? I think they probably could have avoided the embarrassment. To be fair, you probably couldn't argue that he was Ireland's best young player last year. It's the whole ruling. I think it's probably in a strange way, if I'm looking for a positive out of all of this, I think it really, really highlights the need for a change in the rule book. It needs to be bare minimum a first team competitive, a first team fixture. That needs to be the kind of the line that if you make a start or come on as a sub, you make your debut. That you committed to that country because we can't have this again. It's just it's a shambles, and I can understand why people are embarrassed by it. So listen, I think it could have been avoided. I think it's a little bit mischievous to vote him in, knowing fine well that it's going to cause this, but could actually be a positive in the end because it's always the glaring problem with the ruling at the minute.
Just overall, in camp, Darren, there's an optimism around the players, the new manager, the coaching staff, the fans, the media. Of course, in every new campaign, there is an optimism. Maybe that wouldn't have been there if Martin O'Neill was still in charge, but that optimism hopefully will bleed into the players and they'll be able to start with a couple of positive performances and results.
Yeah, there's always a kind of a freshness and an optimism when a new manager comes in, and likewise, there's always a freshness when there's a new campaign starting. So I think that combined, it adds to a positive atmosphere within the camp. People are looking forward to the qualifying campaign, and I actually think they're two perfect fixtures to kick us off with, because I look at Gibraltar away and George's home as probably the least two glamorous fixtures you've got. But we'll actually have a buzz. I think the Aviva will have a buzz about it. Been Mick McCarthy's first game back at home in charge of the national team. Obviously, Gibraltar has to come first. And I think the players will have an extra... It's just a natural reaction, an extra buzz in their step to try and impress the new manager. So I think they're a perfect way to start. Hopefully, it starts with 6 points and then sets us up nicely to go on from there. Otherwise, I think when you get these games mid-campaign, a home game to Georgia doesn't inspire many, but I think the buzz of the new campaign and the new manager, fans and players alike, will be itching to get going, and hopefully we can kick off with six. And I say hopefully kick off with 6 points. We need 6 points.
Now, Darren, around 800 Ireland fans have secured tickets for the away match against Gibraltar in the Victoria Stadium. It holds just 2,300 people, so we'll make up about one third of the capacity. And I know the photographers will get some brilliant photos with the massive mountain range in the background and a small stand. Mick McCarthy has been there and spoken about the AstroTurf pitch. Maybe you might cast your own mind back to some of the times you played for Ireland in small away venues and what it's actually like for a lot of our players who do play in England and are used to playing in full packed state-of-the-art stadiums every week, and this one certainly isn't that.
No, it isn't. The one that comes straight to mind is Andorra away we played, and it's a tiny stadium. The getting there was quite a shift itself. But that's partly going back to the last point I made, that the players will always be motivated and know what's at stake with any international game, especially a competitive one. But it's natural that you're going away to Gibraltar. You're not going to be exactly completely inspired by the game itself or excited by it. You know you need to go there, you need to win, and you're expected to win. So I think the fact is that it comes now with a new manager, there'll be more out to impress the new manager, and hopefully it'll see us kick off the campaign with a comfortable win, and that'll lead us back into Georgia. But yeah, it's one that doesn't inspire you. It's not going to really excite the players, but equally it's a very, very important game. But I fully expect us to go there and win comfortably.
Yeah, of course, it's the first game and we spoke about the buzz around and the new manager and a very winnable fixture, of course, as well. But from the point of view of our professional footballers, when they do go and they arrive and they see the place and, you know, the crowd is small, even though the place will be full, hopefully it'll be full with the away fans or the home fans too, and the surface and so on. Is it, you know, an issue for players to try and get themselves up for a game like this, or given it's an international, it's a Euro qualifier, it's the first game of the campaign, that just comes naturally?
No, being brutally honest, it won't be hard to get up for the game. They'll understand it. They'll be as committed as they would be for any game. But absolutely, you need to create the atmosphere, if you like, within the squad and amongst yourselves. Because of course, it's not the most inspirational fixture you're gonna get in your career. You've obviously got an AstroTurf pitch, very small ground against a kind of a new country, if you like. But the 3 points are imperative, and the experience that's in the squad will know that. And it's important the group creates the atmosphere themselves, because it won't come from the stands. But that's part of the qualifying campaign. And there's experience. Mick McCarthy himself will have experience. And then going back to the point of the new manager and the buzz in the player's steps, the atmosphere should be and will be buzzing as it is. I can imagine training will be frantic all week, people looking to impress, and I'd like to think that'll flow into the game. So the atmosphere, that's why I'm glad these fixtures are early on the campaign, because the atmosphere will be good in the camp as it is. So hopefully we can look after business and we come away with 6 points after these two games.
Yeah, and the manager's had to make some changes to his cut down 23-man squad already in the last couple of days, with the former under-21 captain Josh Cullen and defender Kevin Long in for the injured Alan Brown and Ronan Curtis, and they're both players who could have maybe got us goals. Particularly Alan Brown's been flying in the championship for Preston, as has Ronan Curtis since he moved away as well. And Darren, just on a final note, Mick of course named a massive, I think it was a 38-man provisional squad before he chopped it down, and some of the headlines, the likes of Glenn Whelan being in, having kind of retired but not really retired, and so on, and then not two other major surprises in the group. What have you made of the squad he's picked and the task he has now over the next 6 days or so to actually pick his starting team for this opening match?
I think a lot of it was to be expected. Obviously, Glenn was one he's looked at and thought he fancied. Listen, one thing I'd stick my hat on is that there's going to be a hell of a lot more energy into the team. I know from playing against Mick McCarthy and obviously following him, supporting the teams from at a younger age and then playing against his club teams, the team will be very, very competitive. They'll be physically demanding to play against. I'd imagine he'll look to get the ball forward into wide areas quickly, put plenty of balls in the box, smother the box with people. I think you'll see a high-energy way of playing football. Now, I think since nearly the last European campaign, we've not performed well as a team. I obviously need as a country the results, but I'm expecting a big upturn in performance as well, because the last qualifying campaign, the early results we got in the campaign kind of masked the performances. The performances haven't been great, and I actually felt we looked lethargic, which is a strange for an Irish team. We looked devoid of confidence and actual structure. I think Mick McCarthy will bring that. I think the squad he's obviously picked, it's his first squad. I think you'll probably see a different squad maybe in the second time of asking. But these ones have been asked first. It's up to them to impress him to stay in the squad, and I fully expect everyone to do so. So I'm looking forward to seeing. As I said, I'm fully expecting 6 points, but I'm also expecting much better performances, because we haven't seen that for a long time.
Yes, and certainly I'll be very interested to see how a very similar team probably that Martin O'Neill picked for his final squads, and you know the team for this match might be quite similar as well, how the team actually plays from a style point of view, and also just how the players perform, because both the manager Martin O'Neill and the players were very heavily criticised for performances in the last campaign. So I'm fascinated just to see how we actually play against a team who hopefully will be able to pass the ball around and have a good victory. Darren, great stuff, thanks a million. We'll speak to you next weekend after that opening game and before the game against Georgia, and also good luck today playing for Dundee against Celtic as well.
Thanks very much, Jamie.
Yeah, Your Honour, that's what I call sport on 98FM with Jamie Moore on Sunday. Myself chatting to Darren O'Dea. That was on Friday for Sunday show, because later on today, Darren's Dundee are facing Celtic in the Scottish Premiership. So thanks to Darren for having a chat with us. The best of luck in that big game. And also we'll speak to Darren next weekend in the middle of those games against Gibraltar and Georgia. Speaking of which, after the game in Gibraltar on Saturday, the boys in green are back in Dublin on Tuesday to face Georgia at the Aviva Stadium in what's going to be Mick McCarthy's first home competitive game in charge since returning as manager. And of course, here on 98FM, we have got the biggest tickets for the biggest events in Dublin, including this match. So if you'd like to be there, it's nice and simple. Text or WhatsApp, come on you boys in green, plus your name and where you are. And the number you need is 0877 98 98 98. That's come on you boys in green, plus your name and where you are, and text or WhatsApp to 0877 98 98 98. I should say, these are premium level tickets for the game as well. And you can get tickets as well on fai.ie/tickets. And if you want to enter via a WhatsApp voice note where you can actually shout or sing come on you boys in green, we would gladly appreciate that. And we'd actually play it on the radio for you and make you a bit famous. So yeah, we'll give you another chance to win those tickets later on in the show. Now, speaking of Ireland, speaking of the FAI, some interesting news in the Sunday Times newspaper this week, in a story written by Mark Tigg. And he tweeted last night about basically the FAI Chief Executive John Delaney trying to secure a court injunction for this story not to be published, but it has been, and the headline reads, Delaney's unexplained 100,000 cheque to FAI. John Delaney, the Chief Executive of the FAI, wrote a personal cheque for €100,000 to his employer in 2017. Delaney has refused to explain the reason for this payment. Well, he actually has released a statement via the FAI, which Nathan will bring you in just a moment. The story in the Sunday Times goes on, last night, the FAI boss failed in an emergency application before the High Court to prevent the Sunday Times revealing details of this payment. Following a 3-hour hearing, the judge ruled in favour of the newspaper's right to report the existence of the payment. A copy of the cheque has been seen by the Sunday Times and its authenticity verified by several sources. It's dated April 25, 2017. The €100,000 payment was drawn from John Delaney's bank account in Bank of Ireland in Waterford. The cheque was subsequently lodged in Bank of Ireland in Blanchardstown near the FAI headquarters. Questions in relation to the €100,000 payment were first made to the FAI on March the 1st. In his ruling last night, the judge noted it was significant that Delaney had 15 days to respond to the queries from the newspaper and had instead launched a last-minute application to the court. The Sunday Times has also seen a copy of the FAI remittance advice document made out to Delaney dated June 16, 2017. This remittance of 100,000 is said to have been paid based upon an invoice In the High Court last night, Delaney attempted to get an injunction based on the claim that the documents seen by the Sunday Times could have emerged only in camera family law proceedings involving his ex-wife. And the final part of the story goes on to say, the judge ruled that the rights of the in-camera rule had to be balanced and that the right of the media to report on matters of the public interest. He added, I am satisfied that the finances of the FAI and any payment and repayment to his chief executive are matters of significant public interest. Delaney, of course, is paid €360,000 a year as chief executive of the FAI, and he also received another €160,000 from UEFA last year. He, of course, is on their executive committee and was elected there in April 2017. So that's the story, Nathan. And when this story went to print, the Sunday Times hadn't heard from Delaney or the FAI, but late last night, a statement was released by the FAI. What does it say?
Yeah, John Delaney said, I'm aware of stories circulating around this loan dating back to 2017. I confirm that I made a once-off bridging loan to the association to aid a very short-term cash flow issue. This is the only occasion on which I provided the association with a short-term loan. That's what John Delaney had to say in the matter.
Yeah, so this story will run and run. We'll have more on 98FM.com across the day as well, and you can follow it all on Twitter too. The one thing I would say is, how does an association as big as the FAI need a loan from its chief executive? I know they're paying back for the Aviva Stadium and there's lots going on and the international team and costs money, and you know, Martin O'Neill is gone and Roy Keane is gone and all the staff have to be paid and such and so forth, and the attendance haven't been brilliant at the Aviva, but it's just interesting that a company that big needs to actually get a loan from its chief executive. So that story, as you mentioned, you can keep an eye on it across the day as it develops and as the journalists try and get more on it. Now, on the way after the break, we are going to speak to Aaron McAneff, the former Derry City midfielder who now plays for Shamrock Rovers here in Dublin. It's one of the most powerful and emotional interviews we've ever had on this show. It's about the death of Ryan McBride, who was the Derry City captain. He was only 27 when he was found dead in his bed just hours after playing for his club. The 2-year anniversary of his death is this coming Tuesday, so Aaron will join us in studio to talk about his friend and a man he calls a legend. We'll hear from the Dublin hurling boss Matty Kenny after a big win for them, and then it's all about the Six Nations with Joe Schmidt, Rory Best and Shane Byrne after Ireland lost in Wales yesterday.
98FM, now that's what I call sport.
Big news in 98FM, our Katie McEntee, who works on the Dublin Talk Show with Adrian Kennedy and Jeremy Dixon, is a mummy. Her baby Tig was born this morning, so congratulations to Katie, who's a great friend of myself and Nathan here, and she's off on maternity leave at the moment. I predicted it was going to be a boy, and well done to Katie and her husband Alan. Well, I'm not sure what I'm saying well done to Alan, because he didn't actually give birth to the baby. Well done anyway. And to Tig, baby Tig, the biggest fan of 98FM's Dublin Talks and the littlest one, has been born. So congrats to little Mac.
Yeah, and you said that you guessed it was going to be a boy. You had a 50-50 chance, really, so that impressive, is it?
Correct, it's not. But I'll tell you what is impressive. This is a nice segue. The Dubs hurlers are very impressive, and they won yesterday. Tell me more.
They did indeed. Matty Kenny's men had an incredible 121-23 point win over Tipperary in Thurles. Eamon Dillon scoring the game's only goal in the first half. It was a tense end to the game with Danny Sutcliffe sent off late, but the boys in blue held on to book their place in the league semi-final, which is against Limerick, but a date has yet to be set for that encounter. The Dublin ladies had an incredible win over Monaghan in the Little National Football League in Croke Park yesterday. 5-14-3-10 that game finished.
Yeah, let's hear now from the Dubs hurling manager, Matty Kenny, who spoke after yesterday's match to Stephen Gleeson.
Yeah, look, we're delighted to get on the road. Wanted to test ourselves against one of the top teams in Ireland. And any time you come down to Thurles, it's going to be very, very difficult. And like Tipperary showed last week, they're in really good form. So, you know, we knew it was going to be a big test today. And, we got that from Tipperary. And, there was nothing in the game. And we just managed to get our noses in front of the finish and got a few vital scores, and with another day the result could have gone the other way. It's a good performance by our guys, and but look, as we all know, it's only March, and you know, it's just we're delighted to just get another game in the league, because you know, these good quality games will stand to our group as the year goes on, I believe.
Yeah, you're kind of building up these wins, you know, in the back of your head. This confidence starts to grow coming into the championship, and that's something, I suppose, that if Dublin can bring that into the Leinster Championship, it really opens up the year for you.
Yeah, look, it's you know, there's 8, 9, 10 teams, you know, in the Lee McCarthy, you know, they're all very, very strong. Like, you know, as you know, down here the Munster Championship is very, very strong, and look at this, very, very strong in Leinster as well. So look at, you know, we'll go home now, and we'll recover and prepare for next week. And in April the club month is coming up, and after that then you'll be into the championship like a shot. So you know, the year is moving on very quickly. So, and as I said, to get this extra game will be good for our group.
Yeah, the Dublin dressing room here next to us sounds like a bit of a disco.
Yeah, well, just Paddy's weekend, like, you know.
Thanks a million.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, there's nothing better than a winning dressing room, and Stephen Gleeson there saying that the Dubs dressing room sounded like a disco, and Matty Kenny says a special Paddy's Day disco. So, yeah, but it's great to see the Dubs hurlers doing well and having their little disco afterwards. Now, there was no disco in Croke Park last night, at least in the Dubs dressing room, Nathan.
There definitely wasn't. It was a disappointing night for Jim Gavin's men. They lost 111 to 114 to Tyrone. This is their third loss of this league campaign, and Cormac Cusla was the only goal scorer for the boys in blue on the exact night, 6 years to the day, that Tyrone last beat the Dubs. So it was a disappointing night indeed. Next up is Cavan in the final game for this league campaign next Sunday at the Kingsbank Breffni Park. 2 o'clock is the throw-in there, with the league definitely out of their hands.
Yeah, now we have our, now that's what I call sports, fan club ready here, Nathan. And that's for Katie Taylor, because she is now a holder of 3 world titles, and it's amazing. She just can't stop winning.
Exactly, and she made history. She was the first Irish fighter ever to hold 3 world titles, and a huge night for Taylor as she took on Rose Volante. She knocked her opponent to the canvas in the opening round and then wore her down to the point that the referee actually called the fight off in the 9th round. Taylor added the WBO title to her own WBA and IBF belts. Next up on her agenda is a huge unification bout with WBC champion Delphine Persoon, which is set for the Anthony Joshua undercard in May in Madison Square Garden. So everyone should look forward to that.
Yes, indeed. And we have to say as well, when you think of St. Patrick's Day, you do think of Michael Conlon fighting in New York, and he is in the ring later on.
Yes, he squares off against Mexican WBC Latino featherweight champion Ruben Garcia Hernandez, who has an impressive 24-3 win record. MSG is the arena, as you said, Patrick's Day. It becomes synonymous with Conlon. Paddy Barnes is also on the undercard. He takes on Texan Oscar Mojica in his first fight since he lost the WBC title battle to Christopher Rosales. Best of luck to both men.
Yeah, now just days after being arrested for strong arm robbery in Florida and allegedly stealing a fan's phone and smashing it, Conor McGregor was one of the main men at the front of the Chicago St. Patrick's Day parade beside the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. And Leo Varadkar had no idea that Conor McGregor was going to be there and actually said, "I don't think he was representing the country. That's kind of what I was doing here, and that's why we're here." And I love this line in The Sun, who have referred to Conor McGregor as a big mouth brawler.
A big mouth brawler. It's crazy that one of our most famous, like, sporting people ever just gets to go to all these huge events with politicians and all, 5 days after being arrested. It just shows the star power the man has.
Yeah, the best of luck as well to everybody doing the Harbour to Harbour walk at the moment. It's actually, would you believe it, Nathan, starts at 9:30, and it's now exactly 9:30. It's where we actually timed it, did we? Did we time
you
this?
You definitely didn't mean
we
that.
We definitely didn't. The 12th annual Aware Harbour to Harbour walk is taking place now, actually. You can walk from Hoth to Dunleary or Dunleary to Hoth, a total of 26 kilometres, and 98FM, the official media partner and radio partners for the Harbour to Harbour walk. So you can find out more on aware.ie, but good luck to everybody involved in that. And well done as well to our Special Olympics team who are over in Abu Dhabi at the moment. So far for Ireland, 8 gold medals, 7 silver and 5 bronze after just a couple of days. We'll cover the team in Abu Dhabi in full detail with a full piece on next weekend's show.
League of Ireland on 98FM, the best place on the radio for the SSE Airtricity League.
Yes, another busy weekend in the greatest league in the world and the Premier Division. Shamrock Rovers top of the table after a very easy 3-0 win over Sligo Rovers at Tallaght Stadium on Friday. Bohemians, their first defeat of the season, beaten 2-0 by Cork, while St Pat's were also beaten 2-0 in Waterford. The other games, what a win for UCD, a 3-0 victory over Finn Harps, while Dundalk beat Derry City 2-0. So all of those 5 games were wins to nil, which is quite interesting. In the first division, Athlone Town beat Bray Wanderers 1-0, a finish draw to 1, Cabinteely 4, Limerick beat Cove 3-1, and Shells, top of the table, a 3-0 victory over Wexford. Longford Town against Galway, a game I was going to go to last night, was called off before, now hours before, in fairness, after the pitch failed a pitch inspection, because it was soaking wet. Now, the League of Ireland is a bit more than football, and this interview will tell you just that. It's with Aaron McInniff, a former Derry City player, who now plays for Shamrock Rovers, just 2 years on from the death of one of his best friends, his teammate and his captain, Ryan McBride.
It's the greatest league in the world. League of Ireland on 98FM.
We've just seen an image on screen there of Ryan McBride's shirt at the Brandywell Stadium. Here's another one there of the Brandywell Pride McBride 5 jersey, and the players still at the moment wear McBride 5, and yeah, that's actually a game. We're looking at a photo of Ryan scoring for Derry in a 1-0 win over Shamrock Rovers on March the 10th, 2017 in Tallaght Stadium, a game I was at.
Yeah.
And 9 days later, he's found in his bed and he's dead. And again, didn't plan this, but the anniversary, the second year anniversary, is actually in a couple of days' time, because we were speaking on the 13th of March.
Yeah.
What sort of words would you use to describe kind of that period? Because you'd beaten Drogheda 4-0 in the Brandywell, and the next morning your captain, one of your best mates, is dead, and you're going into his house to kind of say goodbye to him.
Well, like, we played that game against Shamrock Rovers, and it just came up in my Facebook, like, the timeline memories thing, that the Dundalk game was straight after that Rovers game, and Ryan actually scored against Dundalk, and we won 3-1 at McGinn Park, and then obviously played Drogheda, and we had a really, really good start to the season. We won every game, so we were thinking, like, this could be a good year for us. But never forget on the Sunday when I got the phone call. It was actually Conor McDermott texted me, and he said, do you see what happened? And I just said no, and then he rang me. I was sleeping at the time, and I had a missed call from him. I just thought he was going to ring me and
chat about the game,
for a chat, like. And then he rang again, and I thought something must be wrong here, so I answered the phone, and he was kind of crying on the phone, but I was like, what's wrong with you? And he said, Ryan's dead. And I was like, Ryan who? And he said, McBride, obviously. And I just couldn't believe it. I was like, he must be taking the hand out of me or something. And I checked online and stuff, and then I got a phone call from the club, and they say that it was true. And it's one of the hardest things ever. Because obviously it's someone who's your mate, like your teammate and your captain, and then they see him that morning for recovery, and then he was just going home like we all were, and then he just went for a sleep and didn't wake up. It was, I can't really put it into words.
Yeah, I remember that night we were at the International Football Awards in RTE, all the journalists, and getting to speak to the players, and the news came through again on the Sunday, and ironically this Sunday the International Football Awards run again, and that'll be the kind of around the exact time of the anniversary. And you know, at that time the whole football community comes together. The manager, Kenny Shields, whose time at Derry probably didn't end as he would have wanted at that time, like, he was a beacon of strength to all you guys. I remember him, you know, speaking at the funeral and speaking at the time, and just thought, God, how strong is he? And then to lead the team back onto the football pitch and to continue to play. And there's so much media attention around it, and there's so many people at the funeral, and it's a massive, massive story. I think Martin McGuinness had died the same week, and there was funerals on in the same city around the same time for those two people. Like, that must all be a blur to you to kind of look back. Well, I've played a football match with my mate, my captain, and a few days later I'm at this massive funeral.
Yeah.
That's his.
Yeah. It's really, as I say, it's hard to put on the words. Like, all you have to do is look at his family, like, at that time, and think of them first and foremost, because, like, especially like his father, no father wants to bury their son, and his family are lovely. I've grown to meet them all, obviously through the foundation and stuff. But like, I just remember we were supposed to play Bray again on, I think it was a Tuesday or something. Obviously that game was called off. And all the players went to the funeral and stuff. It was the same day as Martin McGuinness's funeral, so Derry was absolutely packed. It was two massive funerals. And as you touched on, like, Kenny, he was amazing for it, to be honest. And like, for all the players, he gave them a lot of support in any way he could, really. Because it was like on the 18th of April, the next month, like, my godfather passed away, and then a few weeks after that, Hugo Ekiog passed away, which was my coach at Spurs.
Spurs, yeah.
So I had three in, like, that period of time, and it was just kind of like a slap in the face, something I'd never experienced before. Didn't know really how to deal with it or what to do. And to be fair, like, you obviously have your family around you, and you have your girlfriend or your brothers or your close mates. But like Kenny Shields, he did help me a lot, and as did the club. They helped me out and gave me some support that I needed, and like, ironically, looking back at that sort of period when this was happening, when I did get, like, playing football again, it was probably a few of the best best months, like, I've actually played. I'm scoring a lot, playing really well and stuff. And then, like, at the end of that season, I ended up being up for Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year. And I'll never forget that sort of period where them events were happening, because it's so hard, but you get some sort of feeling they just go and play through it or do well or something. And you hear a few stories like that, but whenever it actually happens, like, I don't know, you just find some sort of strength within yourself to go ahead and play. And like, it was a difficult period for, touching on Ryan again, like, for the club and for everyone around the city, because he was known as a legend, really. He worked in a bar, and like on a weekend.
I'm sure you were there once or twice, were you?
That's what I'm saying. I've actually got selfies while he's working and I'm on a night out. And I actually remember, like, just stuff like, if my younger brother was going to get in or something, he was underage, you'd text Ryan, he'd come down and bring him in or whatever. Like, just, he was an absolute legend and a gentleman, like, and for someone to be taken away like that, it's cruel, really. But you have them type of memories they live on with, and I'm sure everybody will remember him for what he was.
Yeah, I'll ask this last question, Aaron, over two parts. And I know you guys got the opportunity to actually say goodbye to Ryan when he was still in his bed, in his house, and that's clearly a very intimate moment, because only certain people would have been asked to do that. Is that something you're happy you did? And, you know, I know, like, one of my very close friends died, and unfortunately it was a closed coffin and we weren't able to see him and whatever had happened. But for you guys to be able to actually go up and to see him, is that something you look back on and go, that's a memory that I will remember for being able to say goodbye? And secondly, what will your best memories of him be? Because you played with him for so long, and now a couple of years on, I'm sure you've had time to, and at different times, I'm sure different kind of things flash into your head of the good times as well.
I think going into that room that night, it's just a bit of closure, really. You actually see it for yourself, and makes you believe, obviously, it's true, because it's hard to believe that kind of stuff, especially when he played a game the day before and trained that morning, or was in training for recovery that morning. It is hard to believe, and seeing him lying there just looked like he was sleeping, really, like, and it's hard. It was hard, but for all the boys, I'm sure they'll say that it was good to get that closure in some sort of way, if you know what I mean. And it's obviously, it's not a nice thing to see, but it is what it is. And like, for being close to someone like that, I think it's nice in a way to see it for closure in your own sort of mind, like. And then the memories of Ryan, I've got a lot, like, on and off the pitch.
Just give me the best one.
The best one.
And one that you're allowed to tell us, if it happened in the bar at 4 a.m, maybe not.
Well, there was one on the pitch that I've said before in an interview, I'll never forget it. We played Glenavon, we had a mid-season break, and we played Glenavon the friendly after the break. Just a friendly game, get the legs going again before the league starts up, and I think we might have been 1-0 up or something. We were just passing the ball about, and I give someone a bad pass, and he shouted at me and said, "What the are you doing?" Like, and I just said, "It's only a friendly, like, calm down." And he said, "No, if you're going to do something, do it right." And I was just like, "Well, I'm not going to argue back with him, am I?" So that's one thing that I've, like, stuck in my head. Plenty of other things on the pitch as well, like, it's tackles and stuff and headers, but that, just that one thing. And I thought, he's a captain that nobody is going to say anything back to, really, and that's just the type of man he was. And then just we actually went on holiday together in Portugal during the break the year before he passed away, and just remember dancing on top of a bar with him. No, there was plenty of good memories from that holiday, but so many memories with someone so big and what he did, and I would just remember him as a legend.
Yeah, so nice to hear Aaron McInniff remembering his friend and his ex-teammate and ex-captain Ryan McBride on there. That's What I Call Sport here on 98FM, just coming around the 2-year anniversary of Ryan's death, and all of us here on 98FM still thinking about Ryan and his friends and family, and may he rest in peace. You can read more about the Ryan McBride Foundation online as well. They're on Twitter and Facebook, and a really good website too, and doing lots of great stuff around Derry and beyond. Now, on the way after the break on the That's What I Call Sport, it's all about the Six Nations.
98FM. Now, That's What I Call Sport with the Liverpool Football Club Store.
It's all about the Six Nations on the That's What I Call Sport for the next few moments. Shane Byrne is on the line. He'll join us in just a second. Nathan, firstly, tell us about the under-20s winning their Grand Slam.
They did indeed. They secured the Grand Slam win with a 26-17 win over Wales at Colwyn Bay. What a year for Niall McNamara's men. They recorded wins over France and England along the way. Elsewhere, Ireland women are in action today against Wales at Cardiff Arms Park. That kicks off at 1:30pm.
Now it's time to welcome former Lions Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne to the show again. Shane, good morning. How are you?
Not too bad, considering what happened yesterday.
Yes, just back from your morning run, Shane, on St. Patrick's morning in the sunshine, so you were out and about nice and early?
I was indeed, yeah. I was overdoing in Twickenham, a long day yesterday, but fresh today, ready to celebrate St. Paddy's Day.
Very nice, very nice. Now we'll get Shane's views on the game in just a second, but firstly let's hear the full match report from 98FM's Will O'Callaghan, who was at the Principality Stadium in Cardiff yesterday.
Wales 25, Ireland 7. Wales have given their head coach Warren Gatland the perfect home send-off by winning their first Six Nations title since 2013 and third slam success of the Gatland era following the successes of 2008 and 2012. Garrett Anscombe said last year he felt crucified by critics, but he's emerged is their starting out half and hero today in a wet and windy Cardiff, scoring 20 points in a man of the match display, with his boot also providing the pinpoint assist chip for Hadley Park's try in the second minute. That early try provided the platform for a Welsh performance where they were sharper with the ball and able to match Ireland's physicality on a day where a slippery ball led to handling errors. A last gasp Jordan Larmour try at least save Ireland's blushes from drawing a first blank in the tournament since 1990, with Jack Carthy converting with the last kick of the game. Mistakes with the ball in hand and boot compounded things throughout the game for last year's champions Ireland, who were set to finishing a disappointing third in the table at the outset of a World Cup year. Roof open, roof closed, it didn't matter in the end, and the Welsh fans are now serenading the success of their Grand Slam winners in the rain. Full time at the Principality Stadium in Warren Gatland's 50th and final Six Nations game in charge of Wales. It's finished Wales 25, Ireland 7.
Your views on the game, please, Shane.
Oh, an absolute nightmare outing. Right from the off, from the kickoff, when we caught the ball and Stockdale ended up pushed into touch, that is a cardinal sin for a catcher off a kickoff. If you're close to the line, you lift your feet up, you hit the deck. If there's people on you and you're protected by the ground in that respect, let people get around you. You don't get shoved into touch. We were unnerved, and then very, very smart by Wales, inside 22, you push up hard to gather the ground to get away from your 22, and we had no sweepers. Conor Murray, they weren't there. Kearney should have been sweeping in behind. And it was something, obviously, that Wales had seen. But unfortunately for us, we expected a response, and it didn't happen. And this has been kind of the theme with us. I suppose, obviously, a lot of comparisons drawn to the England game. And it's just been shown that the true Achilles heel of this Irish team is that if you get in among them, if you unnerve them early in the game, they can't react. There's no thinking, there's no adjustment during the game, which is a real shame to see. And, you know, guys who we would have hoped stood up, you know, the Sextons, the Murrays, the people we always talk about, unfortunately, it wasn't there. And the bench could have been used so much earlier because, you know, just to try to have some effect in the game. But, yeah, unfortunately, a real miserable outing.
Yeah, the Ireland head coach, Joe Schmidt, has been answering some tough questions and he's come out fighting.
I guess you guys will set the narrative, really. We can only perform in those two 40-minute windows that we get, and then the narrative will be whatever pundits or journalists put out there. But for us, we would certainly encourage the genuine supporter not to lose faith with the team, that the team will definitely turn up in Japan, and we'll grow a bit from this. You only have to look back a year and see that England went back-to-back in the championship and ended up fifth. We've fought our way to third. We're in the top half of the championship. We haven't been catastrophic, but we haven't been as good as we needed to be, and today was probably an example of that. At the same time, I'd like to take my hat off to Wales. We've won 23 of our last 26 test matches. We finished third in the Six Nations. Once upon a time, that wasn't the catastrophe that it is today for Ireland. The fact we've won three of the previous five makes it less than it should be. And we'll be the first to put our hands up and say that that's not as good as we want to be. We'll be first to take our hats off and acknowledge the performance that Wales put in today, and then we'll reflect, rebuild, and go forward. And as I said earlier, I would like to think that the genuine supporter will still be 100% behind us.
Well, Shane, is Joe Royce, are we all overreacting?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Like, okay, you understand why Joe's saying that, but there are genuine question marks to be asked. Like, we are, okay, let's look forward to, to the World Cup, which is what is on everybody's radar. That, do we have the ability to throw a campaign together where we can keep that standard up all the time? You know, it really has been shown that we do have vulnerabilities, and some of our players do have vulnerabilities, and we need everybody to be the side that we were in 2018. We need most of our senior players on the pitch. We need those players to be playing very, very well. And, unfortunately, we saw when some personal standards just step down, it really does. The ripple effect is huge throughout the side. And it's something that Joe really has to address. And we didn't see anything that would give us any positivity in regards addressing those issues, because it was a mimic of, as I said, the England game. So that it's very definitely an issue. A side who has the capability to get in amongst the Irish team and unnerve them. And because that's what it looked like. It was unnerved. And if they can do that and maintain the pressure, we haven't found a way to respond. And we're still the good side, the great side, you could say. Joe was dead right, is that, supporters, don't be silly. There's no way this side has just become a bad side overnight. It's just that when we're good, we're very good. But unfortunately, the opposite is applying as well. When we're bad, we're very bad, unfortunately.
Yeah, now a sad day as well for the Ireland captain, Rory Best, his final Six Nations game, and it ended in defeat. He's been reflecting on that.
Look, obviously, incredibly disappointed. I think sort of no one was, it was my last Six Nations game. You kind of want to go out and, like, you want it to be a fairy tale, you want to win, and to win in such a place like this would have been a massive, massive statement for the team, but it would have been involved us having a massive performance, which is, I suppose, ultimately what you want to go out on. You don't want to go out on a performance that individually and collectively you're not happy with. But look, it is what it is. Whenever the dust settles and we get 2019 over with, I'll look back on the Six Nations with a lot of pride, with everything that I've been involved in and achieved. And it just happened to be that it wasn't. It won't go in the highlight reel the last game. But like, that's the way it is.
Yeah, love listening to Rory Best's honest appraisals after every game. You can hear more from him, Joe Schmidt, and loads of the players on youtube.com/offtheball and also on our 98fm.com website. Shane, very finally, we're now mainly focused and fully focused, I suppose, on the World Cup coming up in Japan. And if we weren't before the Six Nations, we definitely are now. And one of the other things that Joe Schmidt said in his press conference was that he's used over twice the number of players in this Six Nations campaign than he did in his first one 5 or 6 years ago, where I think he said he only used something like 17 starters. So from that point of view, he's had a chance to look at players, and we do know he'll be trying to pick his strongest team and his strongest squad for this World Cup. So even though we've won three and lost two of these games and finished third, I'm sure he's still hopeful that we can have a good World Cup campaign when he has his best players on the pitch, even though there have been some warning signs in the Six Nations.
Yeah, that is. I think 36 players were the amount of players that he used, which is an absolutely incredible stat. You know, almost by accident, by default, through injuries, and, it wasn't by deliberate rotation per se, but it is a very positive thing. The more game time these guys get coming into a World Cup, that's exactly what you want, so that when someone's needed in a very big game, they're not like caught like rabbits in the headlights. It was unusual with Joe this year. You saw a few bad decisions, I suppose. The Henshaw move at full back was very unlike Joe. That was a daft thing to be doing. Unfortunately, and retrospectively, maybe closing the roof would have helped yesterday, but two teams have to play in the same conditions. But, you know, it was a shame that Joe and Rory didn't get the send-off that we needed. But look, we still are ranked second in the world. We need to go into this World Cup full of positivity and with a squad that has a huge amount of experience. The warm-up games will tell a tale to see where we are and how teams are reacting against us. But we can still look at a World Cup where we can genuinely at least take a step that we've never taken before and hopefully get to a semi-final.
Great stuff, Shane Byrne. Thanks a million as always for your contributions today and across the Six Nations campaign. Enjoy the rest of Paddy's Day, and we will speak to you, of course, later in the year, talking all things Leinster and the World Cup as well. Cheers, Shane.
Take care, buddy.
Now, that's it for another week on our That's What I Call Sport. Thank you very much for listening, and to all of our guests. More from all of them in the podcast section of 98FM.com. And we will speak to you next Sunday morning from 9 a.m, folks. Have a great Sunday. Happy Paddy's Day. Bye-bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with the Liverpool Football Club Store, ILAC Centre, 98FM.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, folks. Bye-bye.